Association and IndieBirth.com. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event.
Welcome to IndieBirth series of podcasts here on iTunes, Taking Back Birth. Hi everyone, Maren here today with another amazing birth story and interview. I think of all the 80 plus podcasts, the ones that people have responded to the most have been women on here talking about their experience and their story. So today I'm really excited to share my friend Jackie with you all. Jackie has a really special story that she will tell in more detail, but from cesarean to home birth, and not just any cesarean, she's going to talk more about why hers was special, and of course go on to tell us her victorious and beautiful home birth story. So welcome, Jackie. I'm so glad to have you here today.
Hi, Maren. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, go ahead and jump in however feels best to you.
Okay. Yeah. So I am a mother of two beautiful little girls. And as Maren said, the first girl was born via surgical birth. She was 35 weeks and a day. And she was breech. So the doctor, I had planned for a birth center birth, but because I was premature, for one, they wouldn't let me birth at the birth center. And also she was known to be breech. So we transferred to the hospital in Savannah. And the doctor there was, it wouldn't matter what gestation I was, he would refuse to do a vaginal birth. And he told me that the last time he had seen a vaginal birth was 20 years prior, and they used forceps to get the baby out.
A vaginal breech birth, yes.
Yes, yes. So, so I felt at the time that he was a better surgeon, and it would be safer for my baby to be born via surgery than try to have him deliver this baby vaginally. So that is what we did, and it was an extremely traumatic experience. They acted as if she was going to fall out of my body, and I was 2 centimeters dilated. I mean, it was impossible for a 5.5-pound baby to fall out of a tiny little hole. But nonetheless, they took me down straight away to the OR, which was only 2 doors down from where I was. And I was shaking so bad, and the anesthesiologist told me I had to calm down before he could place the spinal because I was just so uptight and shaking so bad. So I managed to do that, and we had the surgery and she was born. And I remember thinking that it would be very surprising if I felt anything when this baby came out, because I was so anxious and I just did not, I didn't see anything, I didn't feel anything, so I had no idea of what was going on as far as birth and how you're supposed to birth a baby. So he showed us our baby and we got to announce that it was a girl, and she was whisked away. And he promptly told me after that I was not a VBAC candidate because he had to cut me vertically, which is not conducive to most places allowing for a VBAC. Right. So he took any emotion that I had for Natalie and he just squelched it, because he ruins every dream I ever could have had for a birth at that point.
Right. And what do you think was the most, most traumatic, but was it just a combination too of like being surprised? No, you know, you didn't expect to have a baby at 35 weeks. And then on top of that, having a breech baby. So having those plans ruined. And then the final, you know, straw being him having to cut you that way because she was breached. How did that feel? Just all of those things like snowballed on each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we had known she was breached for about 2 weeks before I had her.
Yeah.
And so I had been actively trying to turn her because I knew that nobody there would deliver a breech baby at all, no matter the gestation. So I knew that if the baby didn't turn, that surgery was in my future. And at that point, I didn't really think about doing it any other way besides with somebody there, at least. And it was, you know, illegal or whatever for them to attend a breech birth. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was emotional about that even before. And then we had had her baby shower that day, and my waters opened at night. So it was totally unexpected. Mm-hmm. And that was scary because at first I thought maybe I was bleeding because I was laying on the bed and I asked my husband to check what was flowing out of me. And he's like, oh, it's just water. So there was that, you know. And
yeah, and that's really unsettling.
So we were at the hospital. I mean, it took me like 2 hours to get from our car into the ER because I was hyperventilating and just so anxious. I couldn't even get out of the car. I was like, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this.
Oh, I mean, you knew what you were headed for, I guess. That's got to be like, wow, that had to be really intense to just know why you were walking into that building.
Absolutely. And it was, you know, if I hadn't had my dream, it would have been to be at home anyway. And because of insurance, we decided to go to a birth center,
right,
which wasn't that fabulous anyway. But so, yeah, it was incredibly scary and traumatic from the beginning. And then at some point, you know, I had a doula there and she asked, well, do you want to spend the time trying to turn the baby or do you want to just rest? And I opted to rest and she left the room and no kidding, like 10 minutes later, I started labor. And so I did experience 4 hours of labor with her and then the doctor came in and he was explicit on his instructions to me. He said, well, we'll have a C-section in the morning unless your uterus is naughty and goes into labor.
And did he tell you, that's awful. Did he tell you or mention, you know, the kind of cut he would have to do like at this point or before? It seems like that's a really crazy thing to just tell someone afterwards.
No, he didn't mention it at all. In fact, he, you know, was downplaying the fact that I'd have to have a C-section because he's like, well, you know, you can go on to have a VBAC and, you know, he was totally trying to be Mr. Hero in the situation.
Right.
And so, yeah. So I, during the night when I was in labor, I kind of just, I secretly was hoping that I would just have the baby fast and just like, because the nursing staff, even though her Doppler was all over the map because I kept moving, they like never came in. And so like for 4 hours, I was just kind of like, you know, working through my contractions, but nobody really came in. So it was fine.
Yeah.
And during that time, I kind of was just, it was the most peaceful time of that whole day that I was just sitting there working through my contractions, hoping that by some miracle I'd have this baby.
Yeah, of course.
Because they were on it. Yeah, they were on top of each other. They were like 5 minutes or less apart. And so I was like, I can do this. And then when he came in, it went from something peaceful as it could get to this horrible emergent situation. He told them to go get some medication, and I have no idea even what it was to stop the contractions. So then here I was getting the shot in my arm and shaved, and I mean they were so rough on me. And to top it all off, my poor husband couldn't even talk because he had laryngitis. So,
oh my goodness,
he was trying to support me, and nobody could hear him, and it was just chaotic. And I wanted to give him a hug and a kiss before we went into the OR. And the nurse was like, well, you'll see him in there. And I was thinking, lady, I'm at your mercy whether or not he comes in, because I'm going to not feel half my body. It's not like I can, you know, jump off the table and say no until he's here.
Right.
You know, so yeah, absolutely. It was traumatic well before the surgery began. And then he just, him telling me that was the climax of the traumatic experience that day.
Sure. Hey, I never asked you to. I was always curious. Did they like recheck her position before surgery? Like, were they really, really sure? I'm just curious.
So he did a vaginal exam, which, like, thinking back, I'm like, why did I even do that? But
right.
He did, and he could feel her flit. So she was incomplete when we did, when he took her out. She was an incomplete breech.
Right.
So he could feel one of her feet dangling over my cervix, per se. And and the way he said it too, he's like, "Well, I can feel a little foot," and like as if the foot is just gonna fall out. I'm like, "Oh my gosh, dude."
Yeah.
So yeah, he knew that the baby was still breech. And the crazy thing was, when I read the surgical report, my vertical incision is 14 centimeters, which is huge.
Wow.
So for a 5.5 pound, 18 inch baby, I'm like, what did you want to do with that, buddy? I mean, geez.
Right.
Because, you know, in the special scar group, we talk about our extensions and our specific incision sizes. And these women have much larger babies than I do. And I have the known largest vertical extension of
holy cow
for our scars. So,
hey, yeah, will you back up to smaller size. Yeah, no, sorry to interrupt. I was hoping you could explain a little further for people that don't know, you know, why your scar is different and what special scars is, just because there's probably many people that it might apply to.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So he cut horizontally, so the low bikini cut, as it's commonly called. And because she was breech and I was preterm, my lower uterus segment was not expanded large enough for him to cut without cutting into arteries to get her out. So he extended from the middle of that up 14 centimeters up into the, as they would call it, the fundus of my uterus. So the active contractile muscle of the uterus. The reason why they don't particularly care for vertical incisions is just the way the muscles are built, and that the way the uterus contracts during labor, they're concerned of uterine rupture,
right,
which it does have a smidge higher rupture rate, but nothing hideous. Right. And so special scars is a group, it's an international group started by Jessica Teeterman, who also has a special scar. And it's for any woman who has a special scar that's not lower vertical, lower horizontal. So anything that's vertical or J-shaped or U-shaped or plus-shaped, or any woman that has had myomectomies, because they're also put into the lump of having C-sections after that surgery because of risk of uterine rupture.
Right. And what's the percentage of women that I don't know, either have a special scar, or I'd imagine it's certainly on the rise just because C-sections are on the rise. What kind of information do you know about that?
Yeah, so it's hard to tell really what the accurate percentage of women that have special scars is,
right,
because not every woman is interested in finding out, and not every OB is forthright in that information. But in our group, and our group is growing, I mean, we had 300 women in our group, I think, early summertime. And so pretty much any breech baby,
right,
I personally suspect that they have some sort of special scar just because of how they have to, you know, maneuver that baby to get the baby out. But yes, it is on the rise, and we talked about it on Special Scars, and I don't remember that Jessica Teeterman even knew a real statistic for that.
Right. But. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm sure, like you said, though, that unfortunately there will be more women every day with this kind of thing going on, and you know, not knowing to even look beyond it. But I guess we'll get to that part of your story.
Yeah. So I had her, and I felt even right away afterward, if this is birth for me, I'm never going to have a biological child again, because it was so, so traumatic. And, which is crazy, because I have wanted to have more than one child forever. So it was crushing to me. And, at my 6-week postpartum appointment, he was like, well, you know, you'll go on to have another baby and you'll be willing to have surgery again because of amnesia. You'll just forget all about this. And I was thinking, buddy, you don't know.
Wow.
This is not just and it's, yeah, it wasn't physical. I'm like, okay, no, the physical things are minor compared to what's going on in my head right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I felt like he was not the best OB in the world. And it's funny because the birth center staff sang his praises. Oh, he's the best Savannah has to offer. And after my situation, I was like, wow, I really feel sorry for the women of Savannah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not, so, you know, it is crazy, of course, to receive that kind of treatment. It's also crazy that doctors can't deliver a 35-week breech baby. I mean, there's so many levels, you know, where our rights are taken away.
Absolutely. And so after she was born, a friend of mine, she just happened across Special Scars, like, online. And she encouraged me. She says, you know, just don't believe what he said. Just give it time and you research it. And so she was kind of that catalyst for me that I was like, okay, maybe he doesn't know everything.
Maybe.
And I joined. Yeah, because at the time, you know, I put more stock into what doctors say. I was still, it was after I was becoming more crunchy, as they say, but at that time, I still put more stock into the medical system.
Yeah, so yeah. Well, and so many people do, and I guess knowing you, I only laughed because obviously that's not true about you anymore, so it's like the Jackie I didn't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me to even, like, you know, Dr. Stu, I listen to his podcast, I'm like, oh, yes, good. That's a good nugget of information. So for me to even say that about a doctor, like, you know, an MD, right, that's pretty, pretty good for me, because I don't think very highly of most of them now. But so I joined Special Scars and started learning the risks of uterine rupture, and the information that we have available, which is not, unfortunately, because it's quote unquote banned, you know, as far as VBACs are right. concerned, there's not a whole lot of studies done on vertical incisions that aren't, you know, older, because originally C-sections were done vertically and then they realized that wasn't the best way per se, so they started doing it lower in the uterus and horizontally. So yeah, so the Landon study talks about, and it's kind of a menagerie of different vertical scars that he studied, but a 1.9% risk of uterine rupture, and 6% of that was catastrophic. So meaning, you know, the baby died or some catastrophe happened. Mm-hmm. So to me, I was like, well, 1.9%. Okay, if I was going to have brain surgery and I had a 98% success rate, well, yeah, I'm going to try it, you know, like, obviously.
Yeah.
So, and especially with the 6% catastrophic rate, okay, that's even less to me because, okay, if I have a window, that will heal, or, you know, so to me, and every woman is different, she has to educate herself, but to me, it was worth the risk. As my mom asked me, she asked me, is it worth the risk? And I said, yes, it's worth the risk, because it's not just my next baby, it's my future children. So I wanted to give Ashlyn, who's my second daughter, I wanted to give her that chance to have a better birth than her sister. But it's not only just her, it's every other child that I birth.
Yeah.
And their future, because, you know, what we know about microbiome through cesarean versus vaginal birth, you know, it's going to affect this child, not just the day of their birth, but for the rest of their life. So for me, it wasn't just, let's look at the risk of uterine rupture. It was the whole picture of, well, what's going to happen if something does happen versus what's going to happen if nothing happens and I do have a successful vaginal birth, or what's going to happen if I just have that repeat C-section over and over and over again for however many children we want.
Right.
So, yeah. So then we moved from, we lived in South Carolina with Natalie. We moved back to Arizona. And at the time, when I first started researching, VBACs for any midwife was illegal. And then they changed it to VBACs are legal, but not vertical SARs.
Right.
So, so then I got pregnant with Ashlyn, and I had contacted a couple midwives in Las Vegas who were willing to attend VBACs with vertical scars. And then Rani gave me your number, and that's how I got in contact with you. And so we interviewed all three of you. And even then, like, I still had, you know, I have to say, I worked through so much during the pregnancy with Ashlyn.
Yeah, I know.
It was just to think about when I interviewed you and then when I had her, like, you know, the things I worried about when I interviewed you were not the things I worried about when I actually gave birth to her. So,
well, you know, I want to say too, I don't think I ever told you, but I remember when we had that talk, that first talk, I don't know, were we on Skype or the phone or something like that? And I was so impressed with what you just said. Like, you knew that it wasn't the right choice necessarily for every person, but even at the beginning of your pregnancy, you were sure that you wanted to try this, that you were sure that being at home was safer for you, given all the risks. And I remember feeling, you know, very confident in that about you. You didn't sound wishy-washy. I could hear the trauma, of course, but again, you were so smart and really understood your own personal risks, which I think can be rare when someone's been, you know, so traumatized.
Yeah, and I think that for any of us who've had a traumatizing birth, whatever case mm-hmm. may have been for that trauma, you know, you have to work through that trauma so you can come to a place where you look at the real picture and not just this painted picture based on your trauma, which is really hard.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And like, you know, the support or lack thereof, which I'm sure you'll get to, you know, feeling supported by your family or not, and still saying, you know, this is right for this baby.
Yes. Yeah. So I remember when we were talking about who to choose to go with to support our birth, and it was interesting because it came back to just a few things that you guys either said or didn't say, and I felt really confident that you trusted birth and that you trusted my opinion and my knowledge of birth and just what I wanted to do with my body and my baby. And so, yeah, we really felt comfortable that we wanted you there at our birth, and we are so glad that you and Margo were there, and just the support that we got the entire time, because, yeah, outside of you guys and my husband, I did not receive that much support. Our parents literally thought I was going to die.
That's just so hard. Like, I know that you kind of chuckle when you say that, but, you know, I think just that must have been so hard to hear those kind of things as you were planning this birth.
Yeah. So, I mean, they were good to not tell me everything that they felt, which thank God they didn't, because I think that played into my emotions more. But after she was born, my parents and his mom came over and I was like, oh, we're so glad you're okay and the baby's okay. I was like, holy geez, I just had a baby. Like, it's not, you know, this crazy thing that I just did. But and like I said, my mom, you know, straight up asked me if I was willing to risk it, and I told her yes. And this was before I got pregnant. And I think that with our parents, which is surprising because my mom is very opinionated, but they kind of knew where I stood, and they disagreed with what we were doing. But so they didn't really give that much negative feedback. They did some, but I think they kind of just kept it to themselves. But they didn't support me either. They're kind of just like, well, and my mom, because we don't have insurance, so my mom was like, well, what are you gonna do if you have to have surgery? Like, well, we'll just figure it out, you know. I am praying that God keeps us safe and that everything is hunky-dory, but if we get there, we get there and we'll figure it out. It's, you know, like, I'm not going to borrow that trouble. So I really try to even stay in that mentality of not trying to borrow trouble. And it's hard, you know, like, you know, because I talked to you. It was an emotional time for me to go through that birth, and I'm sure it will be again in my next birth, because each one is just different. But just getting past that 35-week mark was huge for me. I feel like, you know, looking back at it, I feel like that was a bigger fear to me than rupturing. And it's so interesting because most people, like, my friend is like, oh, I don't think that I could do that. You know, I have to be at the hospital just in case. And it's, you know, and to each his own, but I to me, I was like stressing to get to 35 weeks. I'm like, if I could just get past 35 weeks. And yeah, so I remember after 35 weeks, this weight totally lifted off me. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, we can do this. So
yeah, yeah. And what about through the pregnancy? Like, how do you feel about fears that came up, or maybe just kind of suggestions or advice for other women that have had a similar experience? You know, how do you prepare for this next birth when stuff comes into your head?
Yeah. So I read books, like I read The Silent Knife, and I read The VBAC Experience. And which the VBAC Experience is pretty much all VBAC birth stories. So that really helped me overcome this fear of, you know, am I making the right choice to trust my body and trust that I can heal and have another baby successfully without my body falling apart?
Right.
You know, because you think that, you know, like, oh my gosh, am I making the right choice? You know, and what's going to happen if something does go wrong? Like, you know, what am I going to do with the outside people? Because, you know, people are so judgmental. And so, yeah, I mean, I read books and I talked to my husband because he's really supportive. So I, you know, anybody who's willing to listen and actually support you and just give you positive feedback, you know, and I talked to you and Margot, and I think for Adam, it was good because he was there and he watched me go through this trauma. And so, and then at one point I wrote a letter to the OB, which took a lot, oh my gosh, a lot of time and a lot of crying and putting it away and not doing it for 3 weeks because I couldn't handle it, you know. Right. Because it was several pages that I wrote him. And
what did you say? Was it just part of your, like, getting it out there before you went on to the next birth, or?
Yeah, yeah. So I basically, you know, told him about how he treated me made me feel, and, you know, and what he did and how it impacted me and impacted my child and what we went through after that birth. And I tried to send it to him after I had Ashlyn, but he has since retired.
Oh, darn it. He never saw your, like, victorious home birth photo?
No.
Oh, darn it.
I sent him a picture, but yeah, and I tried, you know, I tried and tried, and I even called people in Savannah, and they're like, well, I think he retired in January, and I was like, oh, so close.
Oh.
So, yeah, and I conveyed to him how I felt, and I even brought in, you know, future women that he might come in contact with and do surgeries for, and to be like, think of them when they're on the table, and, you know, don't ruin their birth story. Yeah. Telling them about what you did to their uterus. Okay, you could tell them afterward, after they actually meet their child, because I didn't meet Natalie for 2 hours after she was born. So,
wow.
You know, like, so yeah. And that was for me one of the, it was a pivotal time. Like, once I was able to finish that letter, I was like, you know, I got it out. And whether or not he ever is going to see that letter, which he probably won't, but,
yeah, that's a great idea, though.
Yeah, I wrote it on actual paper, and I got my thoughts out, and, you know, it was, that alone was really healing. And, in fact, I suggested to a friend of mine who, I was her doula when she had a cesarean, and I said, you know, you should think about writing a letter to that OB. Right. And see where she's stationed now and send it to her. I mean, you know, for you, it's going to give you freedom, and it might change her mind. It might give her food for thought of how what she says and what she does impacts future moms, you know? So that was huge. And I think, also just acknowledging your fear and seeing that it is a real fear. And 'cause sometimes I think we get so, we have many fears. And so to differentiate, okay, what am I really feeling? Why am I feeling this? You know, exploring that, those right. feelings we're having.
So in your case, you know, would you say there was a fear of rupture because that's kind of the thing, or was it the 35 weeks, or, you know, how did it feel for you kind of getting closer?
Yeah, I definitely think that my fear of preterm birth was way bigger than
That's so interesting. Rupture. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that because after I passed 35 weeks, like, I really hardly ever thought about rupture. There was a point in labor that I continued to have pain, so we checked the baby's heart rate, and it was fine. And, like, after that, I was like, okay, this baby's fine. We're having this baby here. And at one point, too, I thought, you know, I don't care if I fall apart. I'm having this baby here. They can, you know, ambulance me to Flagstaff Medical Center and stitch me up, but I'm having this baby here. Like,
yeah, you were so extremely determined. Like, that's not even the right word, because determined sounds so, you know, like you control it with your mind, but, you know, you definitely worked through so much stuff on so many levels that I don't even know what the word is, but you were very committed.
Yeah, gosh, it was a lot of work. I definitely think that for any woman who chooses to have a VBAC against medical advice, which is
everyone.
Yeah, and definitely, I mean, there's so many more VBAC bans, and I mean, it's crazy. But I think that it's definitely not for those who are faint of heart, and I think that but I think any woman can do it, but you need to be committed and be willing to put in the work, whether it's through your emotional trauma or learning and educating other people, because it is. It's not just one. It's multifaceted experience.
Yeah, I never got the feeling from you ever either, though, that you were just going to try. You know how that's tossed around a lot, especially in the medical world, you know, like trial of labor. Like, that was not you. Like, yeah. You were going to do it. And, you know, I think selfishly, like, it's not really selfish, but on a midwife's end, it's most helpful when women really believe in themselves. You know, not that they feel that way every second of every day, but you can't really convince someone that they can do it. I think there has to be an element of they know they can.
Right. Yeah. And I would say to any woman who desires to have a VBAC, absolutely, you know, research it for yourself. But at the end of the day, you have to believe that you can do it. And you have to believe, you have to be comfortable with your decision to do it.
Right.
You know, and because when it's yours, when you own that decision, you are less swayed by what other people say. And I know women in special scars who have VBACs on special scars in the hospital, and I give them great credit, because that's even harder, because they're right. So often their OB is like, oh, you want a C-section, and they say, no, I can do this, I believe in my body, and that's awesome. And I encourage women to believe in their body, but you have to believe in your body. to really do it, because it is challenging. So I had Ashlyn at 37 weeks, which I think was disappointing for a lot of people around me. And certainly, I wish that I could go to 40 weeks. But, you know, I pray that literally the day before my waters opened with her, because I've been wrestling with this thing of I need to go to 40 weeks. I need to go to 40 weeks. And I said, you know, God, if you don't have that for us, I want us to be safe. I want us to be healthy. And at the end of the day, if that's not 40 weeks, that's before 40 weeks, fine. Like, I surrendered that. Literally, the next day, 5 o'clock in the morning, I get up to go to the bathroom. I lay back in bed, and my waters open. It's like deja vu of Natalie's birth, because I was laying in bed, and my waters opened with her. And after that, like, so we didn't call you for, like, 3 hours, because I was like, there's no point in calling her and waking her up, and, you know, whatever. Like, it is what it is, and we'll just, you know, it's not like we're going somewhere, so.
Right.
Yeah. And after that, though, I had this kind of, you know, panic attack, because it was deja vu of Natalie's birth. And so, like, we sat there and I cried, and he's like, it's not the same, you know, you're going to be okay. And so, Adam kind of helped me. Okay, it's okay. Just because this happens doesn't mean that, you know, the rest is going to be some catastrophe.
Right.
So,
but gosh, body memory, you know, I think that's part of sometimes the triggers, you know, of different experiences, is just like your body remembers, and we have to talk ourselves out of it not turning out the same.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then, so that was at 5 in the morning, and then I didn't go into real labor until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And it was very intense from the first, like, once it decided to start, it was intense, like, 5 minutes or less after that. And it was intense. The one thing that I would suggest to any woman that is wanting to have a VBAC is to have some Maya massage, because, and, you know, do some uterine scar work before you get it, because it's not this way for every woman. But for me, it was incredibly painful.
Because of the adhesions, yes?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. So there were very few times where I actually physically felt my uterus contracting and feeling painful, the actual uterus, and not the adhesions pulling from the uterus contracting.
Wow. Right. Yeah. You had a whole different layer of labor on top of that.
Yes. And it was, incredibly painful. That is something that I'm working on for next time, because, I don't really want to have a repeat of that one, but, I just labored at home, and we were in the bathtub for hours. I stood in the bathtub, ran out of hot water from the shower head, which was like the only thing that, really relieved any of the intensity. And I remember at one point I was so mad that we ran out of hot water. And then my mother-in-law was trying to fill up the, birth tub. And the water pressure, it was, like, literally dripping out of the shower head. And I was so mad. And I was banging the shower head against the shower. And I was yelling, because I was so mad that I didn't have any water. But, and then you came, and you and Margo came. And I remember Margo started doing hip squeezes on me, which felt awesome. And then she suggested that, well, if maybe we should just work through the pain. And I was like, you're crazy. You are crazy. Like, how can you do this and make it feel better and then tell me that you shouldn't do this anymore? and for me personally, the water was, you know, the biggest thing the water helps me with was my legs are so exhausted.
Yeah.
The buoyancy felt good, but it really didn't help much as far as the contraction pain. It was still pretty intense. But she came out in a peaceful, dimmed living room, and it was so different than Natalie. So beautiful and so peaceful. I know the neighbors probably don't think it was peaceful hearing me, but I don't know. Like, to me, it was so peaceful. Like,
it was peaceful.
Like, my hormones were actually doing what they're supposed to do and built to do, and I was on that high, and yeah, I mean, she was looking around, and one of the biggest things for me, and I know this is, you had your podcast on this, but touching the baby, like, you didn't touch her. I think the first time you held her actually was like, I don't know, like, at one of the times we were at the park or something, but
like months and months later.
yeah, like 8 months old or something. But, but like, you know, from Natalie's birth, where I didn't even hold her, like, I literally touched her with my finger for 2 hours. That's all the contact I had with her. To feeling this baby come out of me, and I literally felt her kick her little legs out of me, which was so special to me. So feeling her come out of me, being able to touch her and look at her and not have anybody take her away or even touch her, like, that was such a big deal to me. And like I said, I know it doesn't, like, seem like a big deal, but it really was to me.
Well, it's sacred time, you know, and I think you had such the polar opposite experience, you know, that you could really feel that and appreciate that. But I think the same could be said for most babies born at home, you know, that they don't need to be touched by other people. And that when people get to experience that, when the parents get to, they realize what a sacred right it is to be the only ones to touch your own baby. It's sort of crazy that it's so novel.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I don't know, after having Ashlyn, I think, oh boy, you know, how many women don't know their full capacity? And obviously not every woman is going to want to have the same birth or be in the same place or whatever, but, like, to experience that healing, that I did it, my body stayed strong and stayed whole and birthed this baby into the world safely and beautifully and quietly, and it's just so empowering. I definitely was on a high of empowerment after that. I was like, yes, I did it. I went against what other people said I should do, and not because I'm just stubborn and hard-headed, but I think I did what was best for my child, and it worked, and I did it, and my body worked. And so, it was incredible.
Yeah, and that, you know, that wave of power, I think, I see continue to grow in you. It's been such an honor to know you before and after. And of course, you already were this amazing, strong woman, even if you didn't see it. But to see how that's changed you, and to see your relationship with Ashlyn, and to see you helping women now, you know, as you can with your amount of research and knowledge, like, really, it's so humbling and such a gift, you know. And I can see that your experience was so hard the first time, and, you know, everything that went with that, but it's just made you this amazingly powerful woman.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that, because I, for the longest time, and I might cry because of this, but
it's fine.
I hated Natalie's birth, and I still have a hard time saying that I birthed her because I have no connection. I'm like, well, the doctor just birthed her. He took her out of me. You know, it even now when I know I did birth her, like emotionally, I say, no, I didn't birth her. And so for the longest time, I didn't know why, you know, God allowed me to go through that and Natalie to go through that. But now there's purpose to that, like through indie birth community and just talking with other moms, like I get where you are and I've been there, you know, and we don't all have the same story, but there's that commonality of what surgical birth brings to the majority of women. And just being able to take my experience and, I don't know, give it wings, I guess you'd say, like just, help other moms through and say, you can do it, you know, believe in what you know. And, you know, don't just believe the doctors what they say because they're doctors. You know, do your research and make the choice for you because you believe that is what's best for you and your baby, not because what other people say.
I think
Ashlyn's birth has brought empowerment, not just in one way of yes, I can do it, but bringing Natalie's birth into a whole different light of beauty. It's, you know, a beauty from ashes kind of story.
Right.
And I always say that Ashlyn's birth is my redemptive birth because of Natalie's birth and the just redemption that Ashlyn's birth brought. But yeah,
that's so beautiful. And, you know, like I said, it's been such an honor to know you and continue to know you. And for those, you know, on the online communities, we have a couple of indie birth groups and we have a community group that's public and open to anyone. And, you know, Jackie's been kind of handling that whole group, really, like posting and really engaging women in thoughtful conversation. And, you know, I just wanted to thank you for that. I think it sounds like a little thing, but you're so conscious of where people are at too. I don't think you ever sound judgmental. You really, really, really just want to help women from what you've learned. And so I'm kind of curious what's next for you. Like, are you going to try to do more in that regard? Or what do you think you'll do next with everything that you know and learn and have learned?
Yeah, so, I thank you for offering to, for me to be a part of Indie Birth Community because it really has stretched me. I am seeking out different material in different places and just stretching my knowledge. That's amazing. I would love to be an indie birth midwifery school, but I don't think that's in the cards right now.
With two little kids, understandable.
Yeah, and even more so, Adam is going to school full time and working. I just don't think that it's in the cards. But, you know, I would love to start doing education courses, and I'm really trying to visualize what that really looks like. Because it's something that I can do on my time and not, I mean, babies are born
right
when they want to be born. I don't have the support group to really do that currently, but, you know, education classes, like your indie birth, you know, one day class, like kind of thing. So I'm trying to visualize what this will look like, but, yeah, so that's kind of where my desires and my thought process is going toward, especially as I meet more women in my community We started a Moms of Preschoolers group, so I'm meeting more moms who are childbearing age, and just, I'm like, okay, you know, I have more of a network of moms who may want to learn a different way that they can have babies. And I just feel really strongly about also teaching women, which you guys do in Indie Birth, like the 5-week course and your 1-day teaser class. You talk about the physiology of birth and what our bodies are really made to do and what happens in our bodies. 'Cause I think that is pretty incredible. And I think for me, learning about what hormones work with what and when, and, you know, the intricate details of, it's not just, you know, your body makes a baby in a uterus, like, push the baby out. So just learning the intricacies of that is so empowering to me, and spurs me and spurred me on with Ashlyn's birth to, this is how we were made to do it. Like, this isn't just some new idea that we're coming up with, you know? Right. So just taking it back and, just empowering women in their journey of, you can do it because you were made to do it.
That education, I mean, as you said, is so powerful. And, you know, I feel like that's probably relevant for a lot of people listening. You know, I definitely don't think you have to be a midwife or a doula or anybody, you know, with a really predefined role. Just women, just telling your story. I think it's actually better. It's a lot less threatening for people that you meet. And I think what you're doing just by sharing her story and sharing resources is probably one of the most powerful things that anybody can be doing right now.
Yeah, I'm definitely, I'm not disappointed in my current situation as far as the birth community, because I, especially through Facebook and just talking to women in general, I just feel like I'm making a difference, even though it's not necessarily on the big scale of making a difference.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the amazing part about having a powerful birth. You know, you have to remember that every birth where a baby is brought in peace and love, like you said, affects the bigger picture, which is probably why we get along so well, because it's really not even just about us. It's about future generations. And so you've done your part. If you do nothing else, you've done your part already, which is really pretty amazing. And Ashlyn, too.
I'm grateful for what I was able to give Ashlyn and even Natalie, and showing her what birth looks like. I mean, she was there for a good part of it, and telling her, you know, sometimes things don't work out the way that you want them to, but you can always come back and try again in a different way. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing both of those stories. And yeah, of course, to emphasize that both are really powerful stories for different reasons. And both of your girls are super special and lovely and adorable. And just so glad to have you here. I know women everywhere will appreciate your story. So to get in touch with Jackie, you can find her on Facebook, Jackie Campbell. She's, again, kind of moderating the Indie Birth community Facebook group, so you can find her there if you have any questions or just want to tell her how awesome she is. I know she'd love that. And in the meantime, check the Indie Birth site for updates and new classes. IndieBirthMidwiferySchool.com is our newest venture, and you can see what that's all about there. So thanks again, everybody. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.